Greetings, friends. The theme for this Silent Sunday is unknowing receptivity. And I believe this to be a deeply transformative attitude if we return to it regularly. One of the veils that cuts us off from simply being with God and being who we are in God is that we believe our thoughts about God. And we believe that to be the truth. But our thoughts about God can never capture the profound wonder and mystery of the infinite transcendent one in whom we live and move and have our being, and who is closer than any thought can capture. And our tendency to explain and conceptualize God, although useful at times and to some extent, can too easily create overlays that come between us and the real and obscure the simplicity of being present in God. And so one of the images that is used in the contemplative tradition is that of a cloud of unknowing. And as Psalm 97 verse 2 describes, clouds and thick darkness surround God. This is a way of describing this unknowability of God. The anonymous author of the classic text on contemplation, which is titled The Cloud of Unknowing, wrote, "I know you'll ask me, how do I think on God as God, and who is God? And I can only answer, I don't know." Your question takes me into the very darkness and cloud of unknowing that I want you to enter. We can know so many things. Through God's grace, our minds can explore, understand, and reflect on creation and even on God's own works, but we can't think our way to God. That's why I'm willing to abandon everything I know, to love the one thing I cannot think. God can be loved, but not thought. That's why I'm willing to abandon everything I know, to love the one thing I cannot think. God can be loved, but not thought. Now, this same thing goes for our relationships with one another. It is so important to allow one another a freshness of presence, a clean slate, and the honor of being acknowledged for the mystery of our depths rather than mere surface appearances and labels. We tend to cling to our history of knowing others, which forms a prejudiced kind of knowing, and we make assumptions that the little we know about the other person is all there is to know. In other words, we believe that what we think we know about the other person is the truth about them. And there's a fascinating finding from research into people's perceptions of each other. It's called the illusion of asymmetric insight. And this is described as a cognitive bias whereby people perceive their knowledge of others to surpass other people's knowledge of them. And this study found that we are generally convinced that what we observe of other people's external behavior is more revealing of them than our own outward behavior reveals about ourselves. Because we know that we have a whole complexity of private thoughts and feelings that are not visible to others. And so really, what do they know about who we are in our depths? And in this article, David McCraney wrote, "The illusion of asymmetrical insight clouds your ability to see the people you disagree with as nuanced and complex. You tend to see yourself and the groups you belong to in shades of gray, but others and their groups as solid and defined primary colors lacking nuance or complexity. Remember, you are not so smart, and what seems like an insight is often an illusion." This is so important for us to get hold of and to be humbled by. What seems like an insight is often an illusion. Sure. And similarly, when we're in nature, our tendency to label and know about what we are seeing has the effect of creating an abstraction in our minds. And we tend to dismiss the wonder and creative mystery that's bursting forth all around us. Richard Rohr describes contemplation as a long, loving look at the real. And this necessarily involves an attitude of unknowing receptivity, simply allowing ourselves to be open and surprised by what we're encountering. When I was doing research on women in science for my physics honors project many years ago, I came across a fascinating geneticist named Barbara McClintock, who was maligned by her peers for refusing to adhere strictly to the more acceptable methods of research, which involved abstraction, reductionism, etc., and instead used a methodology of spending hours in cornfields, becoming what she called intimate with the corn. And this ultimately led to such new and important insights about genetics that she won the Nobel Prize in Medicine. We can't hear the secrets that nature has to tell us when we are busy wrapping her up in our concepts and abstractions, reducing her to our labels and our knowing. As the poet Rumi wrote, "The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep." Alan Watts commented that the physical world is the spiritual world. Once we allow ourselves to connect with it without the meddling of our thoughts. He wrote, "We can only experience reality by bringing our whole consciousness into the present moment, by allowing our minds to unconsciously respond to the present as the trees respond to the wind, without hesitation or thought. This is meditation." This is prayer. Thomas Merton wrote, "What I wear is pants. What I do is live. How I pray is breathe." The spiritual life is something that people worry about when they are so busy with something else they think they ought to be spiritual. Spiritual life is guilt. Up here in the woods is seen the New Testament. That is to say, the wind comes through the trees and you breathe it. There's a beautiful simplicity described here of being and unknowing that is profoundly transformative. When we allow ourselves to have this attitude of, "I don't know," the openness and receptivity of this place is the place where revelation can come in, where we are open to encountering God in a more immediate and intimate way than our thoughts can capture, closer than any thoughts, and where we are accessible to the divine action and healing grace within, as Thomas Keating describes it. And so the invitation is to come to our prayer in a way that is fresh, without the baggage of our knowing, not even knowing how to pray, really, but coming to God with the simplicity and open trust of a child. As Romans 8 verse 26 described, we don't know what to pray for, but the Spirit prays within us with inexpressible sighs, too deep for words. In our not knowing how to pray, we are opening to the prayer of the Spirit that is already happening deep within us. We are opening to the immensity of the breadth and depth of the unspeakable inner mystery of the ground of our being. James Finlay wrote, "We must come to our prayer the way a child takes a drink of water. We must sit in prayer in the simplicity with which the reflection of a cloud sets weightlessly upon the surface of some secluded pond. The core of our being is drawn like a stone to the quiet depths of each moment where God waits for us with eternal longing." when I read this, I wrote this response in my journal. I sense the call to silence, like a gentle, intimate magnetic pull from my center. However, I feel myself clawing to the known, clutching to the peripheral, the seemingly gratifying, the concepts, entertainment, activities, and stimulants of all kinds, just to avoid the sinking into nothingness. From past prayer times, I know this to be the nothing that opens itself to reveal a fullness and gentle radiance of God's presence. But it does not do so on command. It requires a letting go of control and formulaic repetition, a willingness to wait in the darkness of unknowing and uncertainty, to entrust myself to the silence, and to be willing to let go of the something and someone I take myself to be. I find that I even try to mimic this experience with my self-will, but this never gives way to the real. But when I do finally give up my antics like an exhausted, fitful child giving in to sleep and surrender to the unfolding silence, I find a quiet fullness of being, a tender heldness that is too close to grasp.